Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Well, today and this weekend, I find myself on September 11th in New York City. I'm speaking at a conference talking about the changes that have come to people's lives, to this country, and to this world because of September 11th. And how can we go forward to resist the police state, or the global police state, the desperate situation of our economy and the global economy? And so I'll be speaking at this conference. I'll be talking to other activists, and I'll be reporting back to you about the conference next week, because by the time this plays, September 11th will happen, and the conference will have already happened. And I just want to say on September 11th to the millions of people who have lost their lives, who have lost their homes, who have lost their security, who have lost children and other loved ones, and to say that violence obviously isn't the solution, but the greed and the power lust of the U.S. military-industrial complex only leads to that. Speaking of that, my guest today is Glenn Ford. Glenn is a distinguished radio host and commentator. And Glenn Ford is also the senior editor and co-founder of the Black Agenda Report. Glenn Ford, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. It's great to have you on.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
I'm a little nervous because you're a veteran radio host and commentator, and I'm just, you know, a newbie, and I haven't been doing this very long, and, you know, you've had quite a long career in it, haven't you?
Well, I used to do at times what you do, but, you know, I really never liked it. I was nervous all the time. So I admire people who can continue to do this this Q&A. Usually I work with a microphone and a recording machine, and I can edit the final product.
Right. Well, we have a good editor here, too, so we can make mistakes or cuss or whatever, and then Scott will edit it out. But usually we don't have to do that because I have fabulous guests, and it's really great to have you on. There's so much to talk about these days, but we only have about 25 minutes, so I really wanted to concentrate on the protests against building the community center in Manhattan. And first of all, what they want to say is that it's a mosque and then it's at Ground Zero. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, everything they say is a smokescreen for the essential, fundamental white nationalism that motivates them. This white nationalism compels them to claim all of the country for the people that they think are the good Americans, the real Americans, and historically that's meant white Americans like themselves. So this is just a variation on the theme. In this case, they're using a small amount of real estate and calling it by superstitious words like hallowed ground, and saying, well, these non-American, anti-American, not good American influences should not be allowed in the vicinity of this hallowed ground. But the same organization that's calling for that demo, a variation on the Tea Party theme, is calling it a demo to prevent the Islamicization of America. So clearly, they're speaking as if the whole of the country is being polluted by these foreign and alien and hostile and not good American influences. It really boils down to extreme, virulent, and I believe potentially violent white nationalism, and we have to confront it. And now that's just those people who are organizing the demo. The larger problems, Cindy, are the apologists. And the apologists, according to a New York Times poll, includes probably a majority, if you believe that poll, of New Yorkers even, who say that it would be best if the community center was not located so close. What does Harry Reid say? He says, that's the Senate Majority Leader, he says that he wishes they would take their community project somewhere else. Even President Obama seems to implicitly question the wisdom of there being any kind of Muslim anything in that arena. It reminds me of when I was a youngster, when segregation was still the law of the land in many places, and certainly the actuality of life in most places. And as blacks were trying to bust out of these tightly packed ghettos and move into previously all-white neighborhoods, and trying to get out of these tightly packed, segregated schools, and I'm mostly talking about in the North now, white people were saying words that sounded very much like what we hear today about the Muslim Community Center, that even though folks have a right to move into a previously all-white neighborhood, really, is it wise? Doesn't that inflame tensions? Isn't this causing antipathy between the races when there shouldn't be any? And other white folks were saying, well, you know, you have your own neighborhoods. You have your own schools. Why can't you stay where you are? Well, we hear these same echoes, very loud echoes of those same kinds of sentiments when people say, well, you know, there are already lots of mosques in Manhattan. So why do you need to be so close to the World Trade Center? That's the same thing as white folks back in the day saying, you know, you already have your own neighborhoods. Why do you want to move into ours? As if, in the present-day sense, ours is the World Trade Center site. So I don't see anything very strange or novel or new about this white nationalist reaction. Even the words are the same. And at this point, what we're seeing is a general white attitude, and it also seems to include our black president, that blames people who are exercising their right not to have to take measured steps. Am I getting too close to areas that other people claim, but are simply acting like regular Americans? As the imam who's planning this project said, there are lots of Muslims, not only who died in the World Trade Center, but lots of Muslim visitors who want to come and visit. And they would also like to pray nearby. This is not a mosque, but it does have rooms to pray, as all large Muslim facilities do. And they should have that right. This is also for foreign and tourist Muslims to have the right to go to a community center near this tourist center that everyone else in the world is going to have access to. And to put it in a nutshell, we're hearing segregation all over again, and that cannot be tolerated, and that's why it's necessary to have this counter-demonstration.
Well, we're having a discussion with Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda Report about the so-called mosque at Ground Zero, which is not a mosque and not at Ground Zero. But does the leadership of the so-called anti-mosque movement, have they come up with a line that would make them happy? Do they say, like, well, if the mosque moves four blocks to the right or four blocks to the left or whatever, then that'll make us happy?
No, they have not, although, you know, and I'm not being facetious, I'm not in constant communications with them. But those kinds of discussions, mm-hmm. those kinds of discussions are being held by the so-called mainstream people who are putting forth so-called compromises. And it reminds me once again of the civil rights movement. Martin Luther King wrote his letter from a Birmingham jail. It was later titled Why We Can't Wait. It was directed at the so-called white liberal clergy who were saying, yes, we agree with you, Martin, and black folks should have the same rights as everybody else in the South, but you have to call off these militant demonstrations. You're moving too fast. Take it slow. Or allow the white folks here in Alabama to get used to the idea of black folks being on an equal footing. But you can't immerse them in this, Martin. You got to go slow. And Martin Luther King wrote back his letter and wrote a book that said, Why We Can't Wait. When you wait in terms of asserting your rights, you are admitting that you don't have them to the full measure that other people do.
Well, I think that that's a serious flaw of the so-called left. And I think that many people who consider themselves liberal or who are considered liberal, they do have this kind of idea that we can't upset the apple cart. We can shake it up, but we can't upset it because then we're either going to offend people or we're going to create something that might be in opposition, might be even worse than what we have now. Do you have thoughts about that?
Yes, people who believe still that America is a white man's country will always be offended when people who are not white men assert their citizenship and their rights. You can't get around that. You can't coddle them. They will be upset. They need to get over it. The only way they need to get over it is by people walking and talking like grown-up human beings and not accepting that they have to tiptoe around people who have mental problems.
Well, that's a very interesting point because I did read your article, This 9/11 in Manhattan, It's a Time to Confront the Racists. And you did say in the article, and we talked about it a little earlier, that Barack Obama and Harry Reid, two of the people in the Democratic Party leadership, have made disastrous concessions to the forces of racism. But Barack Obama is not a white man. And one day, Barack Obama says that It's the right of the organization to build their community center where it is. And the very next day, he didn't really support it 100%. But then the very next day, he didn't really, disavow his previous statement 100%. He just said just because it's their right doesn't mean that it's wise. And you did talk about that earlier. But what do you think went on between Friday and Saturday?
Opinion polls. When you see opinion polls in New York City, supposedly the most cosmopolitan city in the country, which show majorities of people wishing that the community center was not there, urging implicitly that people back off or take it somewhere else, appease these white nationalists. When that's happening in New York, the president's pollsters are reading even larger numbers in the country at large.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is the guy, and I'm not digressing here because it seems that his character is actually in question, implicitly in your question. This is the guy who delivered his famous anti-war speech in October of 2002, and by June of 2003, shortly after George Bush landed on the aircraft carrier and declared mission accomplished, you go to Barack Obama's candidate for Senate, Barack Obama's website, and that speech was gone. Why was it gone? Because when George Bush declared mission impossible, the so-called insurgency, the rebellion, the resistance, had not taken off, and Americans thought they had won the war. And what I found is that Americans seem to like nothing better than a war they think they won. And so support for the war by June of 2003 was soaring because people thought it was over. And Obama looked at the polls, and he read them and digested them and said, let me take my anti-war speech off my campaign site. So this is typical behavior for him. He looks at the polls, and then he backtracks to adjust his rhetoric to the tenor of the polls.
Okay, well, let's move from the specific, very blatant show of racism and white nationalism, and expand it out to the Tea Party in general. In your article on the Black Agenda Report, "This 9/11 in Manhattan is a Time to Confront the Racist," you also say that the Tea Party is media-made. It's like it's a construct of U.S. corporate media. Can you explain this to my listeners, your reasoning behind that, why you feel that the Tea Party is made by our media?
Yeah, the Tea Party as an organization or an agglomeration of organizations or a titled phenomenon is media made. There's no secret to that. We saw it made right in front of our eyes via Fox, the Fox News organization. However, that does not mean that the sentiments that motivate these Tea Partiers, which I call white nationalism, isn't a permanent fixture of American life. So, yes, the Tea Party organizations, the whole gaggle of them, are media-inspired phenomenon. But the underlying white nationalism and racism is not media-inspired. It is called forth by the media. It is validated mm-hmm. by the media. It's given credibility. It's given it's given visibility by the media. But that does not mean, there's no contradiction here. It does not mean that it does not reflect a very strong current in American life, what used to be the dominant current of American political life, white nationalism.
And, of course, it didn't grow from the Bush administration when, there was no Tea Party when George Bush was president. But here we have a president who is expanding the empire. It's only a continuation, many times a continuation of the Bush administration, refuses to hold the Bush administration accountable, is expanding their wars, expanding the empire, supporting capitalism every chance that they can get. But these Tea Party people seem to be focused on Barack Obama, and so they like to call him socialist, or a traitor, because they're trying to put up this false construct that he is somehow cutting and running from Iraq and not doing the job that he needs to do in Afghanistan, when in fact in Iraq and Afghanistan he is just following the Bush regime's playbook. So it seems to me that the Tea Party should be supporting him. But then when he calls him a socialist, when they call him a socialist, it seems to have the effect of stifling also valid criticism of him on the left, because then the left wants to circle its wagons around him. And then it just all turns into partisan politics instead of policy.
The 3 points here, or 2 points. Number one, the fact that, yes, there was no Tea Party under Bush, but in terms of foreign policy, certainly Barack Obama is doing, in terms of war, just like Bush, but the Tea Party is up in arms about his foreign policy, shows that at the root of this is race. But the right. Tea Party phenomenon creates different problems for corporations than it does for us on the left. Maybe they're mirror image problems. I'm not sure. If the Tea Party were not so infused with racism, if they really were so adamantly opposed to the bailouts, if they were so adamantly opposed to the use of the people's money for things other than defense, for example, like $12 to $14 trillion in the bankers' hands, then they wouldn't be so upset about Barack Obama. They'd be leading the charge against Wall Street and causing those plutocrats who run the Republican Party, although they also run the Democratic Party, causing the plutocrats of both parties great problems. But they're not, and in that we see the real contradiction, the one that's always been there in American life. What I like to say is that these white nationalists, these race-first white people, will cut off their own noses to spite a black face. And so even though they make noises about bailouts and Wall Street and such, the main thrust, what really energizes them, is this so-called socialist president, Barack Obama. And we know, of course, it's just because he's black. This complicates the situation for us, and especially in the black community, because there is this tendency when you have these crazy, crazy Confederate-sounding people attacking the black man in the White House with all kinds of epithets and slanders, then there is the natural inclination of black folks to feel that we are all being assaulted by these people. It's backed up, buttressed by the fact that, yes, these people would like to assault all of us if they could. So it complicates the job for us on the left, and especially on the black left. It should be complicating the lives of the plutocrats, but we know that race is the core of what motivates these people, so it complicates our lives more than theirs.
Right. Well, I think it would be great if we could all get together and realize that it's a class struggle, and that it doesn't really matter what these people are in the, what I call the robber class. They're going to oppress us. Doesn't matter what color we are, what religion we are, what political party we are. It's just really it's a case of us versus them. But, you know, we have the corporate media who is continually keeping us divided and ignorant about what is truly happening in our society. But we just have a couple minutes left. This has been a great conversation. My show's not going to play till September 12th, so the counter-protest against the anti-mosque people or the white nationalists or the racists is happening on September 11th. And, you know, September 11th, of course, will be the 9th anniversary of when whatever happened on September 11th. Speaking about the media, there's this, the only thing that I see when I have a chance to tune in is the corporate media talking about the pastor down in Florida who's planning on burning Qurans on September 11th. What do you think about what he's going to do, and what do you think about the coverage around it?
Well, he certainly generated a lot of coverage for himself. This strikes a chord with an audience that that the media wants to attract. Probably on a global scale, it's more important that it's attracted the attention of Muslims all over the world. So in Afghanistan, the U.S. occupied colony, there have already been demonstrations against this burning of the Koran in the United States. And hearkening back again to the proposed community center in Lower Manhattan, the imam who made that proposal has, for the past several weeks, he may be back in the U.S. now, been traveling in Muslim countries representing the U.S. State Department, while the whole world media is covering events like this proposed Tea Party demonstration at the World Trade Center, and this crazy man in Gainesville, Florida, burning Korans. If anyone is a danger to U.S. foreign policy interests, I guess they ought to go to Gainesville and find him and lock him up somewhere.
Well,
based on the logic of national security, of course.
Well, of course, but the media isn't talking about the fact that U.S. troops shouldn't even be in Afghanistan, that the foreign policy of the United States and capitalism is what puts them there. So again, you used the word smokescreen earlier, and I think that this is just another thing to talk about, so we don't really talk about the true issues.
United States foreign policy is taboo for the corporate media, in terms of criticism. Even when the United States commits the most horrendous crimes, such as the killing of 2 to 3 million Vietnamese, a kind of genocide, the consensus among the corporate media is that it was a mistake. And whenever the United States violates the sacred sovereignty of other countries, if it turns out well, meaning the United States didn't lose too many of its own lives, well, then that's a triumph. And if it turns out badly, as Iraq did in terms of U.S. fatalities, then it becomes a mistake. But the U.S. is never wrong and never criminal.
Right. Well, they don't make intentional mistakes is the theme of the empire, that's for sure. Well, Glenn, we're out of time. This has been a great discussion, and we are talking about some hardcore policy and hardcore issues here on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and as you do on the Black Agenda Report. Can you give my listeners your website? It's very easy to find.
Yes, it is. www.blackagendareport.com, and it's free and available every Wednesday morning.
And I would encourage my listeners to go there to get some real honest and some thoughtful, intelligent, and hardcore analysis of current events and what's happening around the world. So, Glenn, thank you so much for taking time to be on the show, and I hope I run into you Saturday.
Oh, you will, and thank you for the opportunity here.
That was my guest, Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda Report. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you tune in again next week. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my producer, Mikey, you for listening, and Glenn for being the guest.
I must make my witness. Have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. Get up now. I want want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore! Just get up from your chairs right now. Go stick your head out and yell and keep yelling, I'm as mad as hell, I'm not going to take this anymore! Just get up from your chairs.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.